You're listening to another topic.
Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is October the 16th, 2015. Fall well underway here in the Northeast. Hope wherever you are, things are doing well. I know my friends in California, especially out in the L.A. area, are going crazy with mudslides and all sorts of crazy stuff going on. But wherever you are, again, I hope you're all doing well. Hope you had a good week. Been a crazy week. What weeks aren't these days? Of course, we had the Democratic debate. We'll get into that in a moment. But as always, I just want to remind you that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration Service. Ever since 9/11, I have, in a manner of speaking, taken my show on the road to try to wake up our fellow Americans about what the failures of our government to secure our borders and effectively and fairly enforce our immigration laws has meant to America and Americans. Our borders are our first and last line of defense against international terrorists, against transnational criminal gangs, against narcotics, against weapons of mass destruction, against those foreign nationals whose presence might be harmful to us. And this is not a statement of xenophobia. I am not anti-immigrant, but I am pro-enforcement. And in point of fact, if you are pro-enforcement, you are pro-immigrant. Think of how many times we see these newspaper articles. You know, the anti-immigrant folks were out there complaining about illegal aliens. Well, that's right. We have a legal system, a system of law whereby the United States admits more than 1 million lawful immigrants, aliens who have been given green cards. They are immediately placed on the pathway to U.S. citizenship, provided that they meet certain requirements. We naturalize more than 500,000 new citizens every year under the laws that I enforced and administered for my 30-year career with the INS, the laws that I continue to support to this very day. I want them enforced with integrity, but I certainly support those laws. My own family is an immigrant family. My mom came here ahead of the Holocaust as a 14-year-old girl from Poland. If she didn't make it here, I wouldn't be here. My kids and my granddaughter wouldn't be here. So certainly my position is not anti-immigrant, but it's pro-enforcement. And when you look at what the politicians have to say, and we're going to get into that, really get into that this evening, you realize what the lies are all about, what the accusations are all about, and what the damage is that is happening. Again, if you're familiar with me, what I'm about to say, you're familiar with. If you're new to the program, my own personal website is Michael Cutler, one word, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. I also, for many years, have been writing for a terrific organization out in California, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. I join many other people on that website in writing about various issues, my area of expertise, immigration, border security, the impact on America and Americans, and as I say, capsweb.org. I write for Front Page Magazine. I'm a columnist where I join many other writers there as well. And I usually focus my attention, again, on immigration and related issues. I write for Progressives for Immigration Reform. You know, this is not a left-right issue. It's a right-wrong issue. Tell that to the Democrats. I also write for The Social Contract. And the summer edition has a major article that I wrote. It's the lead story about the nexus between immigration, terrorism, national security, the 9/11 Commission reports, and where we are today. So that's what this program is usually about. Occasionally, I go off the reservation a little bit. And people sometimes say to me, gee whiz, how can you do a program purely about immigration? And I also appear as a regular on many syndicated radio programs. Sam Sorbo, I love being on her show. Sam is an accomplished actress and a real bright gal, and her program airs across the United States. I go on her program on Monday mornings, and then I understand they tape it and rebroadcast it later in the week on other stations and so forth. Very often I'm on with Bobby Gunther Walsh every other week in Pennsylvania, and Gary Sutton and Chuck Wilder's Talk Back program. I go down this whole list. And I'm not trying to say, wow, isn't it great I'm on all these shows. The point is, there is never a shortage of material when you're looking at immigration, because it impacts. It impacts so many of the challenges and threats confronting our country, confronting our citizens. And we've been in a real problem with all of this for decades, going back to Jimmy Carter. There has not been a single president since Carter who wanted to enforce our immigration laws. And I know there are conservatives who will probably have a cow because I said that, and they'll say, well, Ronald Reagan. And let's be blunt. Reagan gave us the first disastrous amnesty. And no, it wasn't a mistake. I don't care what he said. They knew in Washington that the reason we had what they thought was going to be a million illegal aliens allegedly hiding in the shadows was because of a lack of enforcement. A lack of enforcement. And when they enacted the law in 86, the Immigration Reform and Control Act, for the first time, knowingly hiring an illegal alien was deemed a violation of law. And I got to tell you, my buddies and I at the former INS, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, were ecstatic about it. Because all too often, some really miserable examples of the human species, these people who intentionally hired illegal aliens and exploited the hell out of them. I mean, it was despicable. I had nightmares at some of the hellish conditions that I observed firsthand. You can't begin to imagine the depravity of some of these thugs. So the idea that we could now go after the employers who did this intentionally was wonderful. The only problem was they did not. So if we were overwhelmed with the workload that we had before they passed the new law, imagine what happened when suddenly we had to add to our workload going after the employers who intentionally hired illegal aliens. We were overwhelmed. And, you know, Reagan had to know this. He had an entire agency under his command. He didn't go out there and visit the agencies individually. That wasn't his job. So everybody knew this was an open secret, an open secret. We did not have the resources. And so we wound up with a disaster. And we were told about a million illegal aliens would emerge from those shadows. We wound up with almost 4 million. Today we're being told, well, it's about 11, 12 million. You know what, folks? I suspect that if, God forbid, they did this wacky amnesty that they're talking about, just as we saw back in 1986, at least four times as many aliens would step forward and say, here I am, take me, I'm yours. And let me tell you something else that the Reagan law did, and many of you probably don't know this. The law contained a section that said, under no circumstances, no circumstances, zero circumstances, short of a court order, were we as immigration agents allowed to share the amnesty file with any other law enforcement agency, period. Because if you were to have shared it, you were committing a felony. It would mean going to jail, losing your job, losing your pension. You would be finished. Now, understand that there are no other files of any other immigrants who come legally that are shielded that way. Illegal aliens were shielded from other law enforcement. The alleged excuse was, well, we want them to come forward. We don't want them to be fearful. That's all we keep hearing. These poor people are fearful. So if you came here legally and you were accused of rape, you were accused of drug trafficking, DEA shows up, the police show up, the FBI shows up, ATF shows up, we had to hand over the file. If we did not provide the information, we could be prosecuted for obstruction of governmental administration, and rightfully so. On the other hand, if the FBI came to you, and as it has happened to me many times, Mike, we're looking for this guy. We believe he's killed four people. We're desperate for a photograph. We need an address. We're afraid he's going to kill more people. And I'd pull out the file, and I'd go through it. And the only real good, solid information we had on the guy was contained within his amnesty application. By law, I could not provide that information to the FBI. I had to have them go to a judge and get a court order. I kid you not. And they said, but, you know, if we don't get to him by tomorrow, there could be another dead body. I said, I don't care if there's going to be another 100 dead bodies. I'm not going to jail. I'm not going to lose my job. I'm not going to lose my ability to support myself and my family. And that was part of the Reagan amnesty. So please understand, it is both sides of the aisle that absolutely took immigration and buried it. One of the strongest weapons we have against international criminals and international terrorists are our immigration laws, and we basically were castrated with design. Jimmy Carter started this nonsense, you can't call aliens aliens, they're not illegal aliens, they're undocumented workers, now they've become undocumented immigrants, and the Democrats simply call them immigrants. Indistinguishable from those people who come here in accordance with law. It's astonishing. It's astonishing. Jim Webb, one of the Democratic candidates, and everybody said, well, he was Secretary of the Navy. If you saw the debate, this past week at CNN, they asked Jim Webb, and supposedly he was the centrist. I mean, goodness gracious, with that motley crew, no wonder he was a centrist. And by the way, I'm registered as a Democrat. You have no idea how disturbing it is to see what I saw and hear what I heard during the debate. This is not the Democratic Party. I don't even know what planet they're from, but I don't even think it's from within the solar system. I think it's an extraterrestrial planet they inhabit that orbits a different star altogether. James Webb was asked a very simple question. Would you support or have you supported providing in-state tuition for illegal aliens? And Webb looked a little bit befuddled and he turns around and he says, well, yeah, I could support that. You know, my own wife came to America as an immigrant, couldn't speak a word of English because back home I believe she spoke Vietnamese. And she ultimately got a law degree and she graduated with honors. And boy, oh boy, she is the success story, the American dream. And, you know, the Star Spangled Banner came out and, you know, are you kidding? James Webb, again, did the same thing they all do, conflated illegal immigration with legal immigration. His wife was admitted, let in by an immigration inspector, a job I had, by the way, for the first 4 years of my career with the old INS. She was admitted as a refugee. She did not sneak in. She was not here in violation of law. It's a wonderful story. My mom came here as a 14-year-old girl, became a United States citizen. I can point to so many people in my own personal life, people I've known, people that I care about, people who came here as immigrants legally. I'm not opposed to that. But think about what Webb did. And everybody is going wild. Oh, he was the centrist on the panel. Yes, because you had a freak show out there. This was a freak show. Because, you see, the duplicitous nature of these politicians. We have to address wage inequality. We have to take care of the middle class. We have to right the wrongs. And we have to tax the wealthy. And we have to, you know, on and on and on. We need to create new jobs. Have you ever seen a candidate say, I'm not going to create new jobs? The guy that runs for county dog catcher promises to create new jobs. That's the war cry. Because that's what people are scared to death about. They can't find work. They're losing their homes to foreclosure. One in four American kids now lives below the poverty line. Jobs are a big deal. But what's the point to creating the jobs if Americans don't get to do the jobs? According to Jeff Sessions, who did a hearing October 1st about the Syrian refugees, he said, listen, the impact on national security and the impact on the economy is staggering. And he made the point, as I did at the beginning, that we admit more than 1 million lawful immigrants into the United States every year. They're entitled to work. Yes, you have old people who aren't going to work, and you have babies who come in, and they're not working yet, but they are potential workers. But this is a workforce we're admitting. And then on top of that, we admit, Jeff Sessions' statistic sounds about right, about 700,000 aliens entitled to work. They come on work visas. And then we admit students. And most students from foreign countries get what's known as practical training, which means they get to work. And what's so appealing for an employer about all these people is that they don't get covered by Obamacare. So right off the top, even if they paid the money equal to an American or a lawful immigrant, they don't have to worry about that $3,000 penalty for not providing Obamacare. So instead of tilting in the favor of having employers hire Americans, this administration's policies makes it more costly to hire an American over some foreign national. Think about how anti-American our immigration policies are. And so we hear this war cry, wage inequality. We're going to fix it. We're going to solve it. We're going to help the middle class. We're going to reduce inequality in wages. Well, let me tell you what a lie it is. And let me tell you something else that's really remarkable. But, you know, maybe before what I'll do is, and I know I've quoted this before, but if you don't remember, or again, if you're new to my program, I have to read this to you. Because on April 30th, 2009, Alan Greenspan went before the Immigration Subcommittee in the United States Senate, and Alan Greenspan was testifying at the behest of Chuck Schumer, who at the time, April 30th, 2009, Schumer was the chairman of the committee. And he stood there and talked about how it's great to bring in an undocumented workforce. Yes, the wage suppression happens, but it's minimal. Yes, when you're a millionaire with a huge home in the Hamptons and God knows where else, it's easy to just say, oh, it's a minimal reduction in wage, minimal impact, minimal. Yes, when you're worth millions and millions and millions of dollars and someone says, you know what, we're going to take a dollar an hour off your paycheck if you're making that kind of money, who notices it? Who knows? It's nothing. It's negligible. Yeah, a dollar an hour, wow, $40 a week, who cares? If you're earning minimum wage and they take a dollar out of your paycheck, you feel it immediately. To the guy who's making $8 and change an hour, a dollar an hour is a big deal. And that's what happens. This is all about wage suppression. And he writes that off and says, oh, no biggie. And look how great it is. This is a flexible workforce. Expanding when we need the workers, contracting when there's a shortage of jobs. Folks, there's a shortage of jobs. There's an abundance of American workers. And so many of the TV programs, and I don't care what network, with a couple of exceptions, One American News Network, Newsmax, they've been very good on the issue. But how many times do you see the talking heads on the weekend or whenever talking about the economy? Oh, those lazy Americans on permanent disability, if they would get to work, the economy would do better. Do you think that people on disability are all swindling the system? Do you know the number of people that have gone on long-term disability has, I believe it was a tripling of that number since Obama came to office? So we're talking about a workforce that is suddenly gone on disability. Do you think that people who've been working for decades wake up lazy one morning? No. Some of them wake up unemployed one morning. And that's exactly what is happening in the high-tech industries. And Alan Greenspan lies through his teeth, goes before the Senate, talks about how Bill Gates has been adamant, you know, we need to bring in H-1B visas. America needs them desperately. All these people in the professions are about to retire. No, they were about to be fired. fire and retire sounds alike, but it's not the same word. And when they retire, we're going to have a shortage, and we're driving away the world's best and brightest, and we need them the most. The world's best and brightest, Mr. Gates, are Americans. And we hear all this nonsense from the Republicans, you know, paying lip service to American exceptionalism. We are an exceptional country, American exceptionalism. Now, we need to bring in the best and brightest from around the world. I heard Ted Cruz say that. And Ted Cruz, by the way, wants a 500% increase in the number of H-1B visas. Rubio wants a 300% increase for his I-squared program to bring in more brilliant high-tech workers, even as he talks about the best and brightest and American exceptionalism. Rand Paul, yes, American exceptionalism. The Democrats don't want to recognize it. And he was very public about it. Was on Face the Nation, I believe it was, several months ago. He was asked about immigration, and his answer freaked me out. Rand Paul said he voted against comprehensive immigration reform. If you remember, the bill number last year was S-744. Why did he do that? He did that, he said, because that bill imposed limits on foreign workers, and he doesn't believe there should be any limits whatsoever of any kind. We should let anybody in who wants to work. This is an act of national suicide. Besides the fact that you're destroying families, besides the fact you're destroying all sorts of infrastructure, the real estate market, people lose their homes to foreclosure, the value of real estate goes through the floorboards. Of course, Greenspan addressed that because he's not a dummy, he's just an insidious SOB. You know, I was on a radio program the day after Greenspan testified for Schumer. And I was in such a state of rage. I was on this young woman's program, and she said to me, "What did you think of Greenspan as you watched him testify?" I said, "You know, I realized as I watched him that I was witnessing the first." And she said, "You know I'm going to regret this, but what sort of a first?" I said, "Well, as I watched him with that syrupy, monotonous, half-dead voice, I realized it was the first time they let someone testify who was suffering from rigor mortis." Of course, she broke up laughing, told me afterwards that she spent the balance of her program mopping her mascara off her cheeks from laughing so hard. But it's not really funny. There's nothing funny here about watching Americans go down the drain because we have a corrupt bunch of SOBs in Washington and in city and state government around the country. In fact, it's interesting because I was on with Barbara Gunther Walsh this morning on WAEB over in Pennsylvania. And he said to me, you know, we got into this conversation. He actually didn't say it to me. I was listening to him before I came on. And he was talking about a study that was done, a survey that was done at Chapman College in California. And it's interesting because I participated in a panel discussion at Chapman Law School, and among the other people who were there were Michael Chertoff and several others. And it was interesting because I had the opportunity to sit in a limousine with Chertoff for about 45 minutes as we went from the Nixon Library to our hotel. And it was a very interesting conversation. It was probably the most challenged he'd felt in years on the immigration issue. But the students at Chapman College said that the biggest threat that they fear, can you imagine what it is? Government corruption. And it's brilliant. Because if these people that we elected to office weren't corrupt, weren't on the take, as they say, we wouldn't be having any of these problems. Politicians are on the take. They are taking campaign contributions, and there is no such thing as a free lunch, which is why Donald Trump is scaring all these thugs and crooks and liars, because he said, "Hey, I'm not taking your money because I don't want to have to take your phone call the next day." Holy smoke, what a concept. What a concept. You know, when someone writes a check for $100 and hands it to their neighbor who's running for Congress and says, "Hey, Charlie, I hope you win. Hey, Barbara, I hope you win," that's cool. no one's expecting anything for the $100. But when they start writing checks to the parties for millions of dollars, you know, Citizens United, now all of a sudden you're getting the best government money can buy. And you could see as the amounts of money required to win campaigns has gone up dramatically, the level of corruption has gone up with it. You can plot parallel paths into the garbage can, into the cesspool. It's a downward slope, a steep slope. So that's what you're witnessing. You're witnessing our government selling out. So Alan Greenspan comes along, and then he gets to the topic after he quotes Bill Gates. And I want you to remember that he quoted Gates at the hearing, because Gates had testified in 2007 about the fact that he wanted limitless numbers of H-1B visas, okay, which destroys the middle class, and that's what Gates is about. So along comes Greenspan, and by the way, you know, we keep hearing this nonsense that we have to fix our schools so that we won't have the shortage of workers. There's no shortage. It seems like every week tens of thousands of American high-tech workers, programmers, engineers, scientists, mathematicians, researchers are being fired only to be replaced by people from India. And Greenspan talked all about that. In fact, here's the quote about Gates. Let me read this to you also. This was part of his testimony. This is, again, Alan Greenspan, 2009. The quantity of temporary H-1B visas issued each year is far too small to meet the need, especially in the near future as the economy copes with the forthcoming retirement wave of skilled baby boomers. By the way, if you want to read all this, it's in my latest article for Front Page Magazine. And then he goes on and says this: as Bill Gates, the chairman of Microsoft, succinctly testified before Congress in March 2007, America will find it infinitely more difficult to maintain its technological leadership if it shuts out the very people who are most able to help us compete. He added that we are driving away the world's best and brightest precisely when we need them the most. This isn't Americans he's talking about, ladies and gentlemen. And how many politicians have said that it's dumb that when we educate these foreign people, that we then send them home, we should be stapling green cards onto their diplomas? We've heard it. I think Donald Trump may have said something about that, and I'd like to see what he has to say. Because we right now have over 400,000, let me repeat that, nearly a half million, 400,000 foreign students, many of them from China, India, and China is our adversary. They're building an artificial island in the South China Sea, warning our military to stay away or else. They're building a nuclear navy. They have, as we saw in a 60 Minutes program last year, developed the capability of shooting down our satellites. I assure you, most of their engineers and scientists were trained in the United States. Well, if our universities are that screwed up, why would you want to hire foreign workers who got their degrees in the United States? I thought our schools were incapable of producing the high-quality people we need. Do you understand the lie? They lie and they look you in the eye, and that's why they're politicians, because they're the best scam artists in the world. They can look you square in the eye, and they could care less if they were driving a stake through your heart or your family's heart. They don't care. As long as they're being bribed, they are happy campers. Keep the cards and letters with the money coming in, folks, and I'll say and do anything for you. If a cop takes $20 to fix a ticket, the cop gets prosecuted. If you offer a cop a 50 when you get pulled over for speeding, the cop will probably arrest you. Police officers aren't supposed to take a cup of coffee. I couldn't when you're on duty. But politicians and their cronies rake it in by the barrel, and you don't think that it influences what they do and what they say, even when it means undermining national security, even when it means people getting killed on streets across the country? The Steinle case, the Kate Steinle case, was not an isolated case, folks. The only reason the media made such a big deal was she was a gorgeous young lady. You know, she could have been a model. So, oh my God. So does that mean if you're not quite so pretty, your life doesn't matter? Or if you're not so young, your life doesn't matter. You see, we are losing multiples of the Kate Steinle kind of situation each and every day in towns and cities across America, and the media doesn't report on it. They suddenly had this gorgeous girl, and they said, oh, my God, she was gorgeous. Let's talk about it. That's all this was about. These are a bunch of salacious, twisted bums. If they were honest journalists, and there's precious few of them to be found today, they would report on the frequency with which people present in our country who should not be here are taking lives. But, you know, too much pressure being applied by too many people, making too much money by exploiting cheap labor, by seeking an endless supply of tourists and an endless supply of foreign students. This is all about money, and people who die as a consequence are nothing more than collateral damage. Our military spends tons of money building weapon systems to minimize collateral damage overseas, but right here inside our own borders, we have thousands of Americans dying every year, and nobody notices, and nobody cares, unless the person is an extremely pretty young woman, and then that might make the headline. That's the only way it matters. Otherwise, another day, another day. Oh, well. You see, this is how the game is being played. So you've got Alan Greenspan saying that we're driving away the world's best and brightest as he continues to fire Americans who've worked for him for many years. Dan Rather did a story about this called No Thanks for Everything about 4 years ago. He interviewed a woman who had worked for Gates. She had been the vice president of a Wall Street bank, had her MBA in computer science, was a Phi Beta Kappa graduate, worked for him for a bunch of years, and one day she came to work, and they said to her, here's a box, clean out your corner office, you're out of here. And she said, what did I do wrong? They said, no, you didn't do anything wrong, you just don't work here anymore. And Gates would not provide her with a letter of reference because the idea is to drive American workers out of the labor force so they can be replaced by workers from India. No Obamacare. They don't contribute to Social Security or Medicare. They will settle for much lower wages, much sparser, if any, fringe benefits. That's what this is about. This is an economic decision, and Gates is now building up Africa, and if you want to see something interesting when you're done with my program, while you're sitting at your computer, go to Google or go to some other search engine and punch in Microsoft and then the word Africa. And if you spell it with the letter K instead of C-A-F-R-I-K-A, you will see what Mr. Gates is up to in Africa. He is building an infrastructure so that he can expand his reach. If you think Gates is a philanthropist, I've said it before, I will say it again, if you think he's a philanthropist, then you would believe that a guy that puts cheese on a mousetrap is simply trying to feed hungry mice. It's an outrageous situation. So you've got Greenspan, parroting Bill Gates, right, and talking about how we're driving away the best and brightest, meaning foreign workers, not Americans, foreign workers. And then he says, our skill shortage, I trust, will ultimately be resolved through a reform of our primary and secondary education systems. Again, as I've told you, that's another lie. It's the convenient excuse. But at best, that will take many years. An accelerated influx of highly skilled immigrants would bridge that gap and, moreover, carry with it two significant bonuses. First, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will, of necessity, move into vacant housing units, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes. Now, isn't that an interesting way to describe an American home lost to foreclosure? Vacant housing unit. Can't you see the Norman Rockwell painting on the wall of a vacant housing unit? It puts a lump in your throat, doesn't it? And then he says, and of course, house price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and the plunge in value of the vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. Now, that's another lie, because what really disabled the banking system were Greenspan's subprime mortgages. And just a couple of years before he went before the Senate, while he was still the director of the Federal Reserve Bank, he talked about how, because of technology, they were now able to provide loans to people who would not have previously qualified for loans, and they could spread the risk over a broader area. Yeah, well, the risk got spread, and they couldn't spread it thin enough because it brought down the banking system, the subprime mortgages. Do you know how many millions of illegal aliens were involved? So they didn't even know what their names were, because by being undocumented, they don't have proof as to who they are. And many use multiple false identities. So how do you do a credit check? The answer is you can't. So let's, you know, you heard of compound interest? Greenspan deals in compound lies. One lie begets another lie, begets another lie. And so this is just incredible. But then he gets to the second bonus, as he calls it, to opening up the floodgates for H-1B visas. And here's where you're going to understand what they really mean when they talk about wage equality. You're not going to be happy, folks. The second bonus, again, of opening up H-1B visas, would address the increasing concentration of income in this country. Someone's making too much money. I wonder who it is. We need to address this increasing concentration of income. And I don't think it's Mr. Greenspan or Gates or Zuckerberg or any of those bums. And here we go. These are his words. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled. And by the way, when they talk about highly skilled, we're talking about advanced degrees. In immigration law, skilled equals education. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of the skilled over the lesser skilled. Folks, wage premium is a salary. He's using the word premium to make it sound like it's excess money that they didn't need anyway. Okay? Let me start from the beginning. Greatly, I get so worked up looking at this, I have to tell you. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of the skilled over the lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism. In the process, we have created a privileged elite. How's that for a term? Privileged elite. Have you ever heard the middle class be referred to as the privileged elite? We have created a privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. So in other words, what Greenspan is saying is that if we opened up the quotas for H-1B visas, we would make Americans compete with foreign workers because they're being shielded, and indeed they are. That's the whole point to our labor law, the immigration laws, rather, to shield American workers from unfair foreign competition, to shield Americans from aliens with dangerous diseases or severe mental illness who are violent or sex offenders, shield Americans from spies, terrorists, fugitives, war criminals. That's why we have immigration laws. Shields down, you know? Captain Kirk, shields down. We're under the threat of terrorism. We've never had more heroin pouring into our streets, but let's take the shields down. What could possibly go wrong? And he's doing this to meet the demands of Bill Gates. Now, I watched Gates testify. You need to watch the hearings. You know, all these, well, I won't say all these clowns. There are some decent people in Congress. My friend Lou Barlett is certainly a good guy. Jeff Sessions, I wish Jeff would run for president. I had the distinct privilege of being on a panel discussion with him just under a year ago in Florida with the Horowitz Freedom Center. David Vitter, Senator Chuck Grassley, another good guy. Congressman Louie Gohmert, another good guy, Steve King. There are some good people, but they're few and far between. But most of those people sitting at that dais at those hearings needs to have a big rubber nose glued permanently onto their face. They're clowns. And Gates was there, and, "Oh, Mr. Gates, do you have a couple of more minutes for us? Would you like to make any comments? We haven't given you the full opportunity to speak yet." Yes. I'd love to know these people that were fawning over Gates, how much campaign contributions they received from him, the man with the really, really, really deep pockets, Mr. Gates. You know, when I've testified before Congress, especially a couple of individuals, you know, you hit the five-minute mark and they're hitting the gavel. Tap, tap, tap. Mr. Cutler, you need to wrap up. Tap, 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 tap. And you've seen hearings. You know what they do. Time to wrap it up. Nobody was tapping any gavels when Bill Gates was there because Bill Gates is their boss. Do you understand? Bill Gates is their boss. They took their boss, their supervisor, and they put him before the cameras. It was a kangaroo court. It was a spectacle. Are you willing to hang out with us a little while longer and share with us some more of your brilliance? That's what you were watching. It's like the guy in the mailroom addressing the head of, you know, a major corporation. I can't believe I'm having lunch with him. Oh, my God. That was the look on the face of most of these members of Congress at that hearing. Do you understand that he is the boss of the politicians? He is the one they answer to, not the other way around. And he's getting what he wants. And he's going to get more of it because of what is going on in our country today. Now, you heard Hillary jumping up and down, those billionaires and the gazillionaires and the trillionaires and the money. Well, you know what? I did a little bit of digging. And I really think that you're going to be surprised to know that there is an organization known as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And do you know that Hillary's foundation, the Clinton Foundation, has partnered with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to make certain that American women around the world and girls around the world are getting their fair shake? For all the screaming, and isn't it awful, and those billionaires, and we're going to tax them, and da-da-da-da-da-da, these miserable, all that money, and they control it, and we've got an oligarchy. Hillary is in bed with them. She is in bed with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, as is the Clinton Foundation, worried about the plight of women around the world. Don't you think charity begins at home? Don't you think she should first and foremost be concerned about the plight, not only of American women and American girls, but American men and American boys? No, we're worried about the world. Yes. Because we're going to solve the world's problems by bringing huge numbers of people to America so that that economic escalator that middle-class Americans are running up, we're going to turn up the speed. This is going to be Lucy at the Bonbon Factory. You will not be able to run fast enough. You will not be able to run fast enough. So for all the screaming and the flailing and the objections and the language, Clinton and Melinda and Bill Gates, or the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, have partnered together to try to make sure that women and girls around the world are being treated properly. And, you know, you look at the Middle East, you look at what's going on with the Islamist countries, the way women aren't treated like second-class citizens, they're treated like trash. And you look at all of this and you say, what in the world is going on here? This, to me, is so astonishing, you know, connecting the dots. For Clinton to be hooked up to Gates while she screams about Gates being a billionaire and all this money and all this unfair. And you know, meanwhile, who's connected to whom? What are they doing? What's going on? You see, this is why people, rightfully so, are concerned about government corruption. Because it is so crystal clear where the dots are being connected. And, you know, I just look at this, and it makes me so darn angry, because this is not what America is supposed to be about. This is not the way it's supposed to work. And yet that's exactly what's now happening. And we listen to all this nonsense. And now we come to this refugee resettlement program. And I promised you, if you look at the website for my radio program, there are two members of the United States Senate who just blew my mind when I saw what's going on. I'm not sure why Trey Gowdy didn't hold his hearing. He was supposed to hold a hearing a week ago about the resettlement program. But let me tell you something. Jeff Sessions held a hearing on October the 1st. And he made a whole bunch of points, and he said, you know, there is no way to know who these people are. And he quoted, I believe he quoted Michael Steinbeck. If he didn't, I certainly have included quotes from Steinbeck in my articles. Again, go to Front Page, go to capsweb.org. I'm going to probably write something about this for Progressives for Immigration Reform. I also have a new article coming out for the winter edition for the social contract, so please keep your eye on all that. But the easiest place to find what I'm doing is michaelcutler.net. But what's so astonishing was Jeff Sessions really laid it out. Because Michael Steinbeck, who is the assistant director for the FBI in charge of counterterrorism, went before the Homeland Security Committee in the House, Michael McCaul's committee, and I believe this was February of this year, 2015. He referred to Syria as a failed state. He made it clear that we have no idea who any of these people are. There is no central database. It's not like you run fingerprints in the United States and it goes through NCIC, the National Crime Information Center, and bango, everything comes up on the screen. Yeah, the guy was arrested for jaywalking. He was acquitted, but then he was arrested for shoplifting, and he did 90 days. And, you know, that's what happens. You know, the thing just spits out the rap sheet. We're not getting that from Syria. We're getting nothing from Syria. And he also said we have no footprint in Syria. His word. And what he meant by a footprint is there's nobody who can go out there and knock on doors and ask questions. Furthermore, because we're dealing with so many people, the administration is now about to let in 200,000. 200,000. Let that number sink in. From a part of the world that creates terrorists faster than McDonald's pumps out hamburgers. 200,000. So there's no database, no boots on the ground to knock on the doors, no capacity to interview those people, really interview them, when you're dealing with 200,000. It'll be contractors getting paid minimal wage or a little more than that. I don't even want to imagine the potential for corruption in a system like that. 200,000 people. Lindsey Graham of South Carolina has complained bitterly that the vetting process takes too long. This is the guy who's running for president, who's all up there and, oh, I was in the military and I know how to win the war on terror and I was there and Obama doesn't know what he's doing. Lindsey Graham has made it clear he wants the system to vet these people faster, as does Senator Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut. Jeff Sessions had a really interesting idea. There are others, and I subscribe to it. I agree with him completely. Again, I am sympathetic to the plight of refugees. My family was decimated in the Holocaust. My first wife, who died of cancer 30 years ago, her family was hammered in the Holocaust. Her mother was in a concentration camp. Her dad spent the entire war running for his life in the forest. His brother was caught by the Nazis and machine gunned. I have strong feelings of empathy for legitimate refugees. But Sessions said, you know, We have no idea who these people are. In Europe, 3 out of 4 supposed refugees aren't even from Syria. They are from Iran. They are from Pakistan. They are from Eastern Europe. They're from everywhere. We don't know who they are. This is very dangerous. And then he talked about the economic impact. Now, when I went before the folks in South Carolina, and I'm going to be heading back again in 2 weeks, next week I'm going to be down in Washington with Alan Freed Associates, participating in a seminar for senior members of the U.S. Air Force. I'll be discussing these issues as well. But when I went down to South Carolina, some of the folks, I think, were a little disappointed. They only wanted me to talk about the refugees, and they said, you can't begin to understand the refugee crisis until you understand the orientation of immigration and our government. And I gave them some background. Because this is not the first time we've done this. We find every possible reason to bring people to the United States and let them stay here. We saw it with the surge on the border last year, if you remember. You always see this. They get to come here, and we let them stay here, and then they get temporary protected status. Well, they had a hurricane in their country 12 years ago. Well, we got to keep protecting them. Well, wait a minute. These people are construction workers. Don't you think they should be back home building up their country that just got devastated? No. They have temporary protection. It's all about flooding the market with cheap labor. It's destroying the trade unions. My dad was a construction worker. These poor guys are getting hammered every which way. The quality of work day laborers do is garbage. It's not like what a tradesman does, but it's cheap. And for unscrupulous businessmen, that's all they care about is cheap. So these politicians are willing to sell out America and American lives and American national security because you have to imagine either it's campaign contributions, they're delusional. I'm not sure what their affliction is. But what Sessions said, which makes perfect sense, keep them in the Middle East, the refugees. Establish camps for them where they're fed, where they have everything they need, roofs over their head, take care of them, provide education for the children. Keep them safe from harm. And it is so much cheaper to do it overseas than doing it here. You know, I think you could probably take care of 10 people for the price of bringing one to the United States. And look at the other benefit. You don't run the risk that you're bringing terrorists to the United States. Even if 1% of 200,000 are bad guys, you're talking 2,000 terrorists, potentially. And I think the numbers would be higher than that. Here's the other problem, too. I want to give you a perspective that I've been thinking about for the past couple of weeks. You know, I've often compared the terrorist attacks of 9/11 with the Japanese attack at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. The parallels are striking, almost the same number of casualties, at least immediately, 3,000. Since 9/11, though, over 70,000, that's a staggering number, 70,000 first responders and volunteers and others have been having health issues because of their exposure to the toxins that were released, particularly, not only, but particularly in New York when the World Trade Center came crashing down. The Zadroga Act, in fact, the Congress just failed to renew it, I hope they do, pays for catastrophic treatment because these people are dying terribly. They have lung lesions. They have all kinds of symptoms. They are suffering terribly. Many have since died. And I want you to think about something. I always talked about how it took the United States just 44 months to end World War II after December 7th. We are now 4 times as far away from the attacks of 9/11 as it took us to win the Second World War, and this war is nowhere near being won. In fact, if you look at the hearings conducted in the House and Senate by the Intelligence Committee and other committees, politicians from both the Democratic and Republican parties readily admit that America has never been in a greater risk for a terrorist attack than today, far greater today than September 10th, 2001. We're not winning this war, folks. But you see, what I suddenly realized, and I guess it was staring me in the face and I just didn't see it initially. In order for the Japanese to inflict the damage that they inflicted, which brought us into the Second World War, involved thousands of Japanese sailors and aviators. It was a major military operation. Major military operation. They decimated much of our Navy. Thankfully, some of our ships were still at sea, or they might have destroyed us, period. You know, this might be a very different world today. But they came very close. But it took thousands of their armed forces and their ships and airplanes. It was a major consolidated effort, coordinated effort. September 11th, 2001 was carried out by 19 young men barely out of their teens, and the impact that they had on not only America but the world continues to reverberate. Just 19. We now have millions, unknown millions, of foreign nationals from every country on the planet living inside the United States. This is not about Latinos. When I hear this lie about the Latino vote and supporting the Latinos, this is race warfare, convincing people that this is because Americans don't like Latinos. This is infuriating. It's disgusting. It is despicable. Hillary Clinton made a speech in San Antonio. We like you. We like the immigrants. We don't want you to be second-class citizens. She wasn't talking about immigrants, folks. She was talking about illegal aliens, turning this whole thing into a discussion about race. Everything that the Democrats do today is about race, and the same thing with the journalists. And the Republicans are falling for this because they're inept, stupid, and gutless. If you have a half brain in your head, you understand that it's estimated that 40% of the illegal aliens didn't run the border, came through ports of entry. I testified at a hearing about that. I don't know where they get the 40% number. We don't know anything about anything. What we don't know would fill volumes, mega volumes. But the point is, I can tell you as an agent, I spent years where I didn't investigate or arrest a single Spanish-speaking alien. I investigated and arrested people, yes, from Latin America, but for years from the Caribbean, from Asia, from the Middle East, from Europe, from Canada, from Australia, from New Zealand, you name it. You name it. What does that have to do with Latinos? So they come up with this fantasy. It's lie after lie. And now you have people in Congress and the Senate saying speed the process when none of these people should be getting brought here. First and foremost, our government's primary concern needs to be to care for America and Americans. You know, when there's a terrible tragedy, a school bus turns over, there's a building fire, whatever the catastrophe, and you see these images of parents racing into the buildings, scared to death that their child was injured or, God forbid, worse, and running out of the building, clutching that little child, their child, to their chest. Could you imagine somebody saying to them, "What is wrong with you? You saved your child. Why didn't you save a stranger first?" Yes, if you can go back and save someone else's child, of course you're compelled to do that. But what does every natural, normal, reasonable instinct tell us? You protect and save your own first. We're talking about America. And folks, that's not what we're getting from too many of our politicians. And this is really a very serious problem. We need to make them accountable. We really need to make them accountable. When you can listen to politicians saying that we ought to speed up the process and bring even more refugees here, these are the same people who say that we've got to get it right 100% of the time and the terrorists only have to get it right once. These are the same people that say they're going to create jobs, but everyone ignores the fact that those jobs aren't going to Americans. Please get involved. Please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. If this program, if my information is helpful to you, please, I ask you, forward this to as many of your friends as you can and ask them to do the very same thing. I'm going to say it as I always say it. Democracy is not a spectator sport. I look forward to seeing you again, same time, right here next week, same time, same place, on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. Please get involved. We better get this right this time. See you next week.